Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama. Together you got smooth drama.
All right, all right. Welcome to Smooth Drama with your host, Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the N-word. Tonight in the house, we have author and professor of law and police science, Peter Moskos. And, of course, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Miss 100%. And if you want to talk to us, 646-929-2037 is the call-in number. Once again, 646-929-2037 is the call-in number. And, of course, if you want to talk to us directly during the show live, you can check us out in the Blog Talk Radio chat room, or you can go to our website, smoothdrama.com, and go to the news chat room page, and there you can see my face that's made for radio. If you're lucky. And without further ado, let us introduce our guest for the night, Mr. Peter Moskos. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Now, I mean, my first question, and the first thing I thought was, how you go from police officer to law professor?
Because I started in grad school, I was a somewhat unusual grad student and a somewhat unusual police officer. I went to the police department planning on quitting after a while and then writing my dissertation on that. So I was in Baltimore for 20 months and went back and got my degree in sociology at Harvard and moved to New York, and I've been teaching since then.
So
I'm not a law professor. I just want to clarify that. I got no legal background.
Okay. All right. Well,
my department's got law in the name for some reason.
Okay. Well, I mean, as a police officer, you were required to know the law.
Absolutely, and it's an interesting little training because I was more interested probably in following the law than a lot of people I was working with. But it's a very hands-on approach to law. And the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure, and all that stuff.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you, I mean, how was that as somebody who you weren't really invested in it? So, I mean, how was that experience?
Well, you know, it's hard to be a police officer in a high crime area. Your listeners may know it from The Wire. I mean, those were my streets. It's hard to be a police officer and not be invested in it. I mean, that was my job. That's what I did. Wasn't a calling, but I don't think for most police officers it is a calling. It was a job, and I've had better jobs and I've had worse jobs, honestly. It's a somewhat unique job because there are a lot of people who I worked with who died and got seriously hurt, and that's somewhat unusual. You don't see that as a professor, luckily.
Yeah.
But, you know, while I was there, I did my job, and but, you know, I was also, I mean, I was open about what I was doing, so the guys I was working with, they knew my situation, and they were awfully supportive in general.
Okay. All right. Now, in talking about your book, like your book, Cop in the Hood, and I know you were a proponent of how cops should walk the beat and drugs should be legalized and treatment should be emphasized. Talk about how you formed those opinions.
Yeah, I went into the police department unsympathetic with the war on drugs. Along with just, you know, being human, I lived and did some research in Amsterdam and the Netherlands, where my brother still lives. And saw a different approach to drug policy and just how much more effective it is. But what I learned as a cop is, you know, I knew the war on drugs didn't work before I went into police department. What I saw as a police officer is the really, you know, why we can't arrest our way out of the drug problem. And, I mean, the area I policed at the time in 2000 had about 45,000 people living there. And the police were making over 20,000 arrests a year.
Mm.
And perhaps this won't surprise you, but the neighborhood was basically 100% African-American.
Right.
And, you know, it's not that every other person was getting arrested. There were a lot of repeat customers. But at some level, the neighborhood was decimated by drug dealers. And then it was at another level, it was decimated by arrests and incarceration.
Right.
And it would be one thing if it were working. But, no, they're still killing each other there. I mean, the right. stats are horrible. And it's not drug users shooting each other. It's people in the trade.
The trade, right.
And so, you know, I do want to legalize drugs, but that always turns off some people. Some people love it. But not to create a drug free-for-all. I want to regulate drugs. I want to control it. That's the problem now is drugs are out of control.
Right. Now on that note, in agreeing with you, I think drugs should be legalized and regulated. It just there's that problem when you say regulated. Then once again, the government gets involved and it just goes all off track. As we know, our war on drugs, our so-called war on drugs, it's all off track.
Yeah, but all that would really have to happen is the feds would have to get out of the game. That's it. You know, then let the states and cities decide what they want to do with drug policy. The same way we deal with alcohol now. You know, some states would keep drugs being illegal. And others wouldn't. That's fine with me. But the point is, I mean, you know, I don't have the solution to heroin addiction. If you're addicted to heroin, there's a decent chance that you're going to die addicted to heroin. There is no silver bullet cure. But, you know, I got to leave that to health professionals. My background is policing and sociology. I do have the answer to the kids on the corner shooting each other, and that is to legalize drugs. You know, the guy running the convenience store is not shooting another convenience store owner. The
right.
guy running the bar isn't shooting another bar owner. I don't care whether drugs are good or bad. I mean, I think some, like marijuana, are just that's sort of a no-brainer. But I'm talking about drugs I will say are bad. It's just we're not going to have a drug-free America. Because, you know, the war on drugs is a civil war. It's against ourselves. We can't win it.
Right. Well, I mean.
Right.
Well, go ahead.
No, you can go ahead.
I was going to say, we have a situation, like you said, we have this civil war. There's no such thing as a drug-free world. I mean, it doesn't work. And like you stated earlier about Amsterdam, I mean, it's free. I mean, it's a freer society, and you don't see the violence that we have.
Yeah, they because they don't fight the war on drugs, because they don't have the amount of guns we do, and because they got social programs. I mean, in some ways, it is a liberal utopia. I mean, it's not a utopia, don't get me wrong. But, yeah, they got a murder rate that's a fraction of ours. I mean, they have 1/7 the rate of incarceration. They spend less money on law enforcement. It's hard to look at a place like that. It's not a perfect country, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it's hard to look at those big issues and see anything but success.
Right. I mean, anything that would allow kids to be able to play outside and old ladies can walk to the mailbox without fear of their life. Well, people walking in the street without the fear of God in them, I think is a good thing.
I'm with you on that. You know, and what they're in the Netherlands, you know, they're not basically, you know, marijuana and hash are basically legal. Other drugs are still illegal, but they're not throwing people in prison for it. And that's a big part of it. And they're just fewer desperate people. So at least, you know, if you are a criminal in the Netherlands, you really got no one to blame but yourself, because the government will give you housing and health care and even some money. You know, people will still complain about it, but it takes just the harsh edge out of life to some extent. And I wish we could follow that, but you know what? This is a conservative country. I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Well, it's conservative when it comes to giving money to people who actually need it. They're very liberal giving money to themselves.
The rich, they must be smarter than us because they figure out how to rig the system in their favor.
That they do. Now,
and that was part of my next question I was going to ask. Now, it's not as if, okay, I understand how we all like to call, you know, our government officials, you know, idiots and dumbasses and stuff like that, but these are pretty smart people. So it's not as if they haven't discovered how to regulate and control, but, well, what is the real reason you think, in your opinion, why do you think they just will not do it, and other than just being conservative? Because my theory was always that there's not enough money in it for them. I feel that behind the scenes, they're able to still make their side deals and line their pockets, but if you bring it to light, then it's, they won't be able to, you know, get their filthy little fingers, you know, on certain stashes, stacks of money. So what do you, in your own words or like in your own opinion, why do you think they are just so stubborn and they just will not do it?
How are you talking about just social programs in general or the war on drugs in particular?
The war on drugs. Why are they being so stubborn about it? It's like it's so painfully obvious.
And I'll answer that in a second, but I have a question I just want to throw out there before I answer that is, what happens on the way to the top? How did the past three presidents go from snorting cocaine to president and supporting the war on drugs? What happened right up there? Why doesn't Obama say, you know what, I'm happy I wasn't locked up for it, but you know what, it didn't destroy my life, and I want that to be, you know, and other people should have that same privilege.
Exactly.
Something happens at the top. Clinton, Bush, and Obama have all snorted coke.
Right.
So it's a good question. I think there are a couple reasons. One is inertia. That's, you know, another is politicians do not win elections if they get labeled as soft on crime, and it'll be phrased as that kind of, you know, it'll get twisted into a crime issue. I also think, you know, in rich suburbs, I think there are a lot of parents out there who are so worried about their little Susie or their little Jenny becoming a heroin addict that they don't give a damn what happens to a whole other part of the country, and I'm thinking of inner cities.
Right.
People, you know, there's so many people shot in the inner cities, it doesn't make the papers unless you live there or work there. You just don't hear about it.
Right.
Some of the murders you might hear about. So some of it is somewhere between ignorance and apathy, but I think it comes down to a selfish thing. The other thing, it is a tough sell to say, look, crystal meth and heroin are horrible drugs, so let's legalize it. That you know, logically, I can see why people go, wait a second. But we have the highest rate of illegal drug usage for every drug, period, in the world, what I'm talking about. So at some point, you think people would wise up and say, wow, 40 years of the war on drugs, drug use hasn't gone down. We can try and get tough, but prisons have drug problems. I mean, if we can't keep drugs out of prison, you know, how are we going to keep it out of a supposedly free society?
Well, I think that the drugs that are manufactured in laboratory, even though we call them prescription drugs now, your methamphetamines and whatnot, those crystal meth, that stuff should not, that should be the ones that are illegal. And
you know, crystal meth never would have been invented if it weren't for the war on drugs. It was invented because for a short time it was legal until they made it illegal. If people could get high, you know, it's Chris Rock who just said people want to get high. And, you know, I don't really have a problem with that. And I think if we let people get high in safer ways, we would have never had the crystal meth problem. And also, you know, cocaine and heroin, they were invented in laboratories. The Bayer Company, the same people who brought you aspirin, brought you heroin. You know, whoops, sorry about that one.
Well, it used to be in Coca-Cola.
So yeah.
You think of that, flying off the shelves.
But you know what? If you really wanted Coke back then, I mean, yeah, it was in Coca-Cola, but you could just buy it over the counter if you really just wanted cocaine. It wasn't a big deal. I mean, yeah, some people got messed, you know, some people got addicted to it and died. They were always called victims of cocaine, by the way, when it was doctors and their wives. It was only when it started going into the working class and into the black communities around 1900 that people started blaming the drug user instead of blaming the drug.
Right.
So that's sort of a common trend.
Right.
Well, in lieu of that, I know you have in defense of flogging, where you were saying that there should be a lessening in sentencing, and you're saying that you should be able to choose flogging as opposed to the years.
Yeah, I wanted, because we need an alternative to incarceration. I don't think it's the best answer. I hope it's not the only answer, but I think it's a better answer. And if I can just shamelessly for a moment encourage all your listeners right now, while they're listening online, to open up another window on Amazon and go to In Defense of Flogging and buy the damn book. Because I don't think it's exactly flying off the shelves yet. And it's a good read. It's a short book. It's only like 13 or 14 bucks on Amazon. So anyway, that's my first shameless plug. There might be another if you let me stay on long enough. But here's the problem. We got 2.3 million prisoners right now. Before we had the war on drugs, in 1970 we had about 330,000 prisoners. We got seven times as many prisoners today. We don't have seven times as many criminals. These are choices we make.
Right.
And we have chosen to lock up more of our people than any other country in the history of the world ever. We have more prisoners than China, and they got a billion more people than we do.
Right.
You know, we got more per capita than Iran and Cuba and Russia and all these supposedly evil countries. We have a gulag of incarceration, and no one's got an answer. We somehow think it's normal, and it's not. It's horrible. So I do want – the book is meant to be provocative. I want people to go to see a title, In Defense of Flogging, and go, what the hell is this cracker talking about? And that's fine. But then, I want them to read past the title and learn a bit about incarceration, learn about the history, and do something about it. So, yeah, what I propose is if you're convicted of a crime, guilty or not, it doesn't matter, you're convicted, that the judge gives you the choice to like they do in Singapore, to get caned on the ass. And you do that. We can talk about the number, but I propose one lash is 6 months. So it's 5 years or 10 lashes. And if you take the lashes, and I think we all would, right?
Yeah, probably. About that one.
Yeah. then you get to go home. You might be able to keep your family together. You might be able to keep your job if you happen to have one. All the things that screw you up about prison, you'd avoid because you wouldn't go to prison.
Well,
and you'd still punish.
Well, that's the issue.
You know, you have hard-headed people out there, too, though. Well, they may not care about getting hit. So it's like, I want to do this crime, and I'll go get my lash, and then I'll go out and I'll do it some more because by then my ass can, you know, healed up some. So I'll be able to take another 2-3 more lashes. And so it's like you have, you know, people still, they're still going to commit the crime. So I don't
Look, you have hit upon a key, indefensible weakness of the argument. There is a chance that someone could mug you, get flogged, and then mug you on the way home again. I don't have a good answer to that one. But here's my question to you, is why do we put people in prison? Is it punishment? Is it to keep them away from us? Is it to deter crime? What's really, you know, why do we keep people in prison? And I think it's become nothing but punishment.
Right.
And as punishment,
I think it should be more severe punishment. Like, say, for instance, this is the thing that I'm disgusted with, that a drug dealer, the streets, the three strikes and you're out thing, I think is BS to begin with. But a drug dealer can get damn near life in prison. But, I mean, if you murder somebody, you can get, 5 years? some little girl murdered her mother, father, and her two brothers, and she only got 7 years in prison, whereas a drug dealer is sitting in prison for the rest of his life. Something is really wrong with that.
Absolutely something's wrong. But, you know, we got to do more than say something's wrong and say, well, who's, you know, people have been talking about how bad prisons are since, well, since the first prison, but certainly since the 60s and the Civil Rights Movement. And since then, no one's listened. We've just built more and more prisons. We have a giant prison industrial complex. So, I mean, that's why I'm trying to, you know, by defending flogging. And as I say, you know, I'm not pro-flogging. I'm pro-choice. But by defending flogging, I mean, I want to get the focus turned on prisons. California was just ordered to rehouse or release 30-some thousand prisoners.
Right.
Because it is the court said it is cruel and inhumane because of health care reasons, because they're literally dying in the hallway. That's 30,000. And then I heard some politicians say, well, we're not going to release the dangerous ones. Well, if they're not dangerous, why are they in prison?
Exactly.
To get back to 1970, if California could just go back to 1970 level of incarceration, they would have to release 85% of the prisoners. We're talking, I forget the number, it's like 130,000 they would have to release. Now, if somehow they could do that, and I don't advocate that because I think, unfortunately, a lot of people become damaged goods in prison, the budget deficit, the huge budget deficit of California would be cut in half, just like that.
Right.
If we could just go back to a normal level of incarceration.
Well, I mean, but we know that prisons are money-making facilities.
Right.
You know, and that's part of it. I mean,
it is part of it, and it's the moral part that we have to fight. The idea that and, you know, I'm going to jump ahead to I hope you were planning on asking me, but how can you talk about whipping people, because that's what they did during slavery? You know, there are going to be a lot of black people getting whipped, which is true.
Well,
were you going to ask that? I hope you were going to ask that.
I was going to mention it probably wouldn't have gone over well.
If you weren't going to ask me, you would have let me off too easy.
I was going to ask you.
here's the thing. It would be mostly non-white people getting flogged because that's what makes up our incarceration population.
Right.
Just to highlight this injustice is not to condone it. I would hope that by highlighting this, people would see it for what it is. What's evil about prison, in part, is it's out of sight, out of mind. You say, oh, we don't know. We just send them away, and, you know, and that's that. Prison, we pay a lot of poor rural white people to guard a lot of poor urban black people. And if we really need a, you know, socialist big government make work jobs programs, which I'm not opposed to, we got to do it in some way that does not literally involve human bondage.
Right.
That is the descendant of slavery. If we can't face someone getting whipped on the ass, well, you know, that's a little too precious for me. Suck it up. We have right now companies and prison guard unions that profit from human bondage. History is not going to look back kindly on us.
Right. Oh, but I also think that part of it is when you look at the prison incarceration rates and in your defense of flogging and whatnot, then we start, okay, so if the violent criminals, they just go to jail. There's no choice for them. But am I going to get flogged for a traffic ticket?
You'll never be forced to be flogged. It's always by choice. Because I'd say that's important because it does take away a lot of the cruel and unusual opposition. Because, you know, it is cruel and barbaric to flog someone, but it's not cruel and barbaric to offer the choice.
More cruel and barbaric to lock them up in prison and have them go through things like rape and stuff like that. So
I know. We got to accept prisons for what they are, which is a cruel way to warehouse people.
But,
you know, a lot of people don't care about people in prison. For, you know, right or wrong, they say, I don't care. They all deserve it.
No.
But you know what? For everyone, we should care about it because they all get out.
Well,
95% of prisoners are released.
Right.
So it's in our own best interest to make sure they're not criminals when they get out.
Right. Well, that's that point. When you talk about the nonviolent ones, you know, those guys that did the jokes, the hackers, the traffic tickets, whatnot. Those guys go to jail. I mean, they're exposed to the real criminals, and it's a done deal. Because as we know, there's no rehabilitation going on.
There's none.
I mean,
if there were rehabilitation, we'd have to separate it from incarceration.
Yeah.
You cannot rehabilitate someone in prison. We know that people who do time are more likely to commit crime than those who don't. So,
Right. Look,
there is a chance someone could get flogged and commit another crime right away. But overall, we would have less crime because people wouldn't go to prison. That would be a pretty big victory right there.
Okay.
You mentioned, the thing about drug deal. Let me talk about drug dealers for a second. Because, first of all, I think even if you get them, there's some people we need to lock up because they are truly psychopathically violent.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
There's some people we have to lock up because they touch little boys and won't stop.
Yeah.
And there's some people I think we have to lock up because they're terrorists and they're just dedicated to killing Americans. You know what? There are not that many of them.
Honestly, we're not talking, it's a small amount.
For the other 2 million prisoners. But drug dealing is a good example because, look, if we arrest a pedophile, you're not going to go take his place. Little boys won't get touched anymore because this guy was the problem and now he's behind bars.
Well, the thing is, if you're a pedophile and you're a priest, you don't go to jail.
Well, some do, and then they get killed. But we have to understand.
Crazy though because they're not. It's like they keep giving the pedophiles chance and chance and chance again. But if you're a person that has, say, for instance, you're a drug dealer, you go to prison, you get out, you do your time, you get out, but you're on probation. As soon as you don't pay your PO, they put out a warrant for your arrest, and boom, you're right back in prison again. Think of how many thousands of people are in jail just because they didn't pay their probation officer versus pedophiles, rapists, murderers.
If we could empty our prisons out, we would have cells for people that really need to be there. But when we lock up people really psychotic, violent people, or the people we're not just punishing them. We're actually afraid of them. We're locking them up because we don't want them on the street because we're afraid of them. Prisons do that really well. But when we lock up a drug dealer, all we do is create a job opening. We don't solve the problem. And then we can lock up that drug dealer, and then someone else will take his place because people want to get high, and there's money to be made. So we know that we're not going to stop drug dealing, but we can lock up We could lock up, hundreds of thousands of drug dealers, and it doesn't solve the problem.
They're still getting high and selling drugs. It's drugs from jail because the girlfriend's bringing the drugs in jail.
Yeah, and when that new dealer takes the place of the guy who just got locked up, there's a good chance the guy down the block wants that turf, and that's why people get killed.
So you're going to kill him.
It would be better to have one old head who's been selling for 30 years, and a stable drug market is a peaceful drug market, and prohibition just makes it worse. That's during alcohol prohibition we had Al Capone, and now we've got little kid in Baltimore they call them Yo Boys. We got Yo Boys on the corner shooting each other. I wonder, don't people care? And I don't know.
People only care when it affects them.
Them. Yes, that's right.
No one cares when it's out of sight. Because I read it in the newspaper or online, it's impersonal.
I don't know. Maybe some of your listeners, or maybe I don't know your background, where you live. But so why isn't there more support in neighborhoods that are ravaged by drugs for a rational drug policy? You ask why it doesn't happen? Because if you go to America's ghettos right now and you ask the non-criminals, they're going to say no, keep fighting. A lot of them will say no, keep fighting the war on drugs because, of course, they suffer from it.
Right.
But it's not like there's a great groundswell of support in neighborhoods where people are slinging crack to legalize crack.
Well, that's where you have the conundrum. It's like there's a school I volunteer at, an elementary school, where the security guard has a bulletproof vest. I mean, it's one of them things that a lot of people don't understand the implications of that. And like you make the good point, when you're talking about legalizing drugs, you know, grandma who lived in the drug infested area, like, no, we're not legalizing crack. Hell
no, but you know, grandma probably would support flogging.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure
they
would.
Like, they need more fish.
No.
You need not two.
You have no idea how many old, you know, the stereotypical gramps or pops would tell me, just beat the crap out of those.
Exactly.
sir, I understand why you'd like it, but I can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know how it is in this country. People are up in arms when you talk about whooping your kids, much less
right.
grown up. I mean, what would Dr. Spock say?
My mom said I was raised by that book, but I never read it, so I don't know.
I mean, the advocates for not discipline your kids, and you know, you can go statistics for and against. I mean, what works for one may not work for the other. I mean,
that is a good point, and people forget that. You know who write those books are people who live in very safe neighborhoods and have a lot of money and can mm-hmm. buy child care mm-hmm. and things like that. You know, I teach in a public university, and a lot of my students say they would not be there if it were not for at least the threat of their father or grandfather's belt.
Right.
And who am I to tell them that that was not the right way to do it when they're telling me, thank God that my parents threatened to beat me. Some of them say they did get beat. I don't have kids. I didn't grow up where they grew up. But for someone to say that you need the same system of child rearing everywhere, you know what? If you're in a safe neighborhood somewhere and you mess up, the stakes aren't so high.
Right.
If you're in a dangerous neighborhood and you mess up, you get killed.
Right.
So maybe some people have time for a timeout. Other times you just got to say, no, you can't do that. This is not a matter of you figuring that out on your own. It's a matter of me threatening to smack you. Because
right.
This is life and death we're talking about.
It's non-negotiable. I mean, like I said, school I volunteer at, the security guard has a bulletproof vest. You see bullet holes in a couple of classroom windows. I mean, and those people who are talking about the timeouts, whatnot, they don't live in those neighborhoods, like you said. So
no,
they don't understand the implications of all that, where survival is number one, not what am I doing after school, who am I playing with.
Yeah.
The difference in priority.
Absolutely.
Well, I have a question. Help me to understand. Well, we're talking about the whole flogging versus, you know, going to prison, and then we talked about on the level like of a murderer. Why does it take so long? What is this? You're holding a murderer's hand. He's killed, let's say, 10 people. We know that he's going on death row. Why does it take 20 years for this SOB to get the chair? Why? Why do we as taxpayers have to keep feeding his ass? Instead of, why not just kill him right away?
Because there's some people, I don't think most, but there are some people on death row who are innocent. And I don't know what how can you defend killing an innocent person? Now, I think maybe there could be a standard of proof that is beyond a reasonable doubt. Maybe there should be 100%, we know certainly, son of a bitch, that you did it. Like, this is... There's no question. This is not witness testimony or even, you know, forensic evidence. You have the gun. Everyone's, you know, we caught you. Those people I would have no problem with. The problem is, you know, who gets stuck on death row a lot of times, who the justice system screws? It screws the innocent because the justice system loves for you to show remorse.
Right.
I don't know why. But, you know, you say, I'm so sorry, and you get leniency. Well, who isn't sorry? Innocent people aren't sorry.
But who's going to feel sorry for those families of the victims? And I do. I'm pretty sure there are. We can't say that everybody that is accused of killing someone is guilty. I'm pretty sure there is a very, very, very small percentage of people that are actually innocent. But I'm saying once you have proven that this that he's guilty. Okay, he was proven guilty 5 years ago, but it's been, you know, all
I
this
know.
Time has passed. I keep letting him sit there.
I mean, I can look. The reason is because our justice system is slow, and because we have mandatory appeals for. I mean, you know, this isn't a good answer. I'm just saying, and this is why. It's because we have mandatory appeals for people on death row, which we need.
Right.
But
well,
sorry,
yeah.
So maybe there's some way when we know when there's no question they're guilty. This is not a jury, you know, that type of thing.
Well,
but that's because it's a system that the courts and death penalty opponents have set up to make it inefficient.
I think chiming in here, I mean, a case in point, like a Charles Manson is still alive. I don't understand that one. But in retrospect, you look at like this.
Is he on death row, or was he convicted when there was no death penalty or something? Why is he still alive?
I really.
He's on death row. He's been on death row for the longest.
Well, I don't think he's on death row, but I know that he's in isolation because some prisoners tried to kill him a long time ago, but they're protecting him.
And
that's
another thing.
Why
are they protecting him?
Why do we put people on death row on suicide watch?
Right.
And then we have a doctor examine them to make sure they're healthy enough so we can kill them.
Why is it so? Wait, we want to be humane. We want to give them a shot and we want to do it slowly. But when they were cutting that little boy's head off, they didn't care
I mean, here's the thing. I think killing is wrong. I'm not passionate about it, but I'm against the death penalty because I think killing is wrong. You know, do I have sympathy for the murderers who are killed? No, none at all. I don't mind when they're killed. I'd like to think we can rise above it. I mean, you know, I like to think we live in a New Testament society and not an Old Testament world.
not an eye for an eye type of world.
Yeah.
I got it.
You know, and it's an ideal. Despite having written a book called In Defense of Flogging, I'm not filled with vengeance. I don't know what to say.
But I mean, we can't program ourselves to death, and that's what's happening to America. There's a program for everything, and I think it's just ridiculous. Come on, really? We need a program for that.
I think I agree in a sense, because as far as death row goes, you know, we have a lot of cases that come up recently in Texas where there are a slew of guys that it was circumstantial evidence and DNA freed them. I mean, we had the Washington movie Hurricane, a guy who was death row. He was innocent. In those cases, we know that they're few and far between. But
they're out there, and because we know justice is flawed, it is a good argument against the death penalty. It doesn't mean there's nothing wrong with wanting to kill these sons of bitches, the ones who we know are guilty, but that's why we have a rule of law. I mean, we don't have mob rule, and we don't have lynchings. That's what we got the justice, you know. Yeah, the system is designed to protect criminals to some extent, but you know what? Maybe that's better, or else we'd all be out there with pitchforks.
Well, yeah. Well, that's how it used to be.
and unfortunately, when everyone takes a pitchfork, you know who loses? The good guys.
Right.
Exactly.
The good guys definitely lose. And on that note, tell the people once again, we going to give you your shameless plug time. Where can we catch Peter Moskov?
Well, I hope at your local bookstore. Certainly Barnes & Nobles has it, but go to Amazon.com or any of those online sites. The last name is spelled Moskos, as in Sam, and the book is called In Defense of Flogging. And it's an intellectual game. It's designed to make people think. I do defend flogging. But it's not a policy proposal. It's more about prisons and flogging. And, you know, it gets the debate started. I mean, if I didn't write a book with that name, I don't think I'd be on the show right now. So in that sense, the book is already a success. But it'd be so much more a success if people bought it.
Also, if y'all want to catch up with Peter Moskos, you can go to his website.
Yeah, go to it's PeterMoskos.com and go to there. I keep a blog at CopInTheHood.com, which in the shameless plugging department is the name of my first book about policing in Baltimore and the war on drugs.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with shamelessly promoting yourself, sir.
You got to pay the rent. Luckily, I got a day job because I am a teacher.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show, and we got to do this again. I mean, because we just talked. I can have you on the show every week. I mean,
I've really enjoyed it. Yeah, it's far better than most shows I've been on. So,
well, we want you to keep it real here.
Well, I figured that, and I look forward to that.
Yes, I mean, no artificial sweetness here. So once again, I want to thank you for coming on the show, sir. And
definitely
look forward to getting your book and reading it and having more social discourse.
Yeah, that's outstanding. Thanks so much.
All right.
I'll be tuning in the future.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Have a good
bye-bye.
Night.
See you again. Good night. All right. That was Peter Moskos, author, professor. I mean, and if y'all was listening, all around cool guy. I mean, I agree with a lot of that. And even if you don't agree with the flogging, I mean, you have to agree with the philosophy of discourse. Can we discuss it? And can we try to come to solutions as opposed to just beat them and throw them away?
Right.
I think that's the message in there that a lot of people are missing. We need to talk and work situations out, not just talking about it, but how can we solve the problem?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about. On that note, we gonna go on a break. We gonna go back to the old school. This is Donny Hathaway. I Hear Voices.
Let's get down now.
together you gotta be smooth. Drummer.
All right, welcome back to Smooth Drama. That was Donny Hathaway, I Hear Voices. And I the key thing I take from that is we need to hear people's voices out there, not necessarily here on the show, but your voice is very important. I mean, you can't stand up and be counted if you don't stand up. That's a very important thing. You can't be heard if you don't open up your mouth and say something.
You know, like they always say, closed mouths don't get fed.
That's right.
And that's the absolute truth.
Yes.
If you keep your mouth shut, nobody will ever be aware of your need.
Right.
If you express your need, then you'll never have your need fulfilled.
Exactly. And speaking of needs, we need to talk about the dumb asses of the week.
Now,
I don't know. Would you want to go first, Miss 100%, or shall I present my case for dumb ass of the week?
I could go first. I have no problem.
All right, then. Ladies first. Okay.
Thank you. In Ohio, an unidentified man in his late 20s walked into a police station with a 9-inch wire protruding from his forehead, and he calmly asked the officer to give him an x-ray. He said he wanted the x-ray to help him find his brain. He claimed his brain had been stolen, and the police were shocked to learn that the man had drilled a 6-inch deep hole in his skull with a Black & Decker power drill and stuck the wire in to try and find his missing brain.
Miss 100%.
Yes, sir.
I'm gonna take a guess that there was some drugs involved.
It doesn't say.
I'm just thinking that someone who is not high or chemically imbalanced would be looking
with a drill.
Right, with a drill. I'm just gonna take, even though they don't say it, I'm a guess. I'm gonna take a gander that there are some drugs involved.
Yeah, more than likely.
Yeah. that was very unintelligent, but I'm thinking that narcotic was speaking for him.
His missing brain, dumbass, missing brain. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. He was the scarecrow.
Yeah.
That's all it was. It was life imitating art. My dumbass was the whole country of Taiwan. Well, the police in Taiwan, the authorities. There was a Taiwanese blogger who was jailed for giving a restaurant a bad review. food blogger whose surname is Lu. She was sentenced to 30 days in jail and 2 years of probation for her negative review of a Taichung beef noodle restaurant. She's also been ordered to pay about $7,000 in U.S. money in compensation to the restaurant.
Why would she told the secret ingredient?
But no, she just said that the food was too salty. So, I'm like, I mean, you go to jail because you say the food is too salty? You can't criticize? I mean, well, we'll just say it. I will say it. Do not go to the Taichung beef noodle restaurant.
She was a food critic.
A food critic?
Is that right? And they knew that she was a food critic, and they fed her anyway. And then,
well, also there were cockroaches. She said were in the restaurant, and it was kind of unsanitary, and that owner was a bully. So what do? They go down there, and they said they visit the restaurant, and the health officials did not find the restaurant was unsanitary. Like, yeah, I'm thinking they cleaned up after the fact. But it's neither here nor there.
He was giving away the secret ingredient.
Yes, the owner of the Tai Chung beef noodle restaurant, because he can't arrest me, he is my dumb ass. And the people, the arresting officers, the authority, who, and the judge who ordered
this,
you too.
So you just got an entire group of dumbasses this week, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you arrest somebody for that, for just telling the truth. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What's next? And
wow.
Speaking of telling the truth, you know, we was talking about jail and you know, how jail is not really the place you want to be. And I know we didn't get a chance to talk about the homeless man who committed a crime to get the medical care. And I think what's striking about it, you know, with the healthcare debate and whatnot, and we're talking about an older guy who, as we know, prison is not a nice place. And so an older guy would take the chance of rape and beatings and all this other stuff that you subject yourself to going around real criminals because he needs the medical care.
Mm.
I mean, that's the point that people aren't looking at. I mean, there are some people, and one thing I forgot to mention in reading the comments in Peter Moskov's articles, whatnot. Some of the people talking about how nice jail was. I'm like, y'all have never been to jail.
Yeah, obviously.
You're watching TV. I mean, maybe they needed to watch a show like Oz, so you kind of get an idea of how jail really is. You know, dudes shanking you, dudes raping you, and making you put on makeup. You know, not understanding your...
To watch that movie Penitentiary. Remember the old movie Penitentiary?
Right. Well, being around real criminals.
Right.
And in a concentration of real criminals.
Right.
You know, and this man, because he was ill, committed a crime so he can subject himself to that. I don't...
Yes.
Think people understand the implications of all that.
Well, see, Dick, that's what I was saying earlier when I was saying that we have programmed ourselves to death in this country. For the simple fact, look, watch this. We have people who say, for instance, you only make a certain amount of money per month, but it's always too much money to qualify for free medical. But you can commit a crime and they will put you on a program because you're supposedly in this certain group and then you'll get the free medical. And so you have to really wonder, okay, Mr. Moskos was talking about, you know, a lot of people being in prison and they don't really need to be there. And if we were to, you know, get these people out, it would save so many millions of dollars a year. That could be money that's put towards providing health care so that people like this man won't have to commit crimes just to get medical for himself. You have disabled people who can get Social Security checks, but you still cannot get medical. Even if you do get a Social Security check, if you don't get what they call SSI, which is Supplemental Security Income, you have to get at least a dollar in that in order to get free medical. So you can be a disabled person. You can be blind. You can have kidney disease. You can have cancer, anything. But unless you're getting welfare or some type of supplemental income, you don't qualify for free medical in this country.
Right.
So it's...
Yeah, I mean, that's that issue. I mean, that
maybe all the people are committing crimes on purpose. Maybe he's not the only person that's doing it on purpose. Maybe he's just the only honest person to say, I'm doing it because I need medical.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but I know there was an instance of a guy down in Florida that I made a joke about who felt, but it was sad commentary actually, who felt it was easier for him in jail than it was to live and function in society as a free man.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've heard people say, oh, I'm going home. I was just on vacation. But they're saying home as in jail because they've been in and out of prison so much. They see jail as their home. It's like, oh, you know, the old saying, three hots and a cot.
Mm-hmm.
They would rather be in prison and not have to work and get taken care of versus being out here on the street not able to find a job and, you know, eating out the garbage can. So let me commit a crime so I can go to prison and get taken care of.
As I said, sad commentary. Speaking of sad commentary, I just had to ride on this. The United States government this week published its anti-slavery report, which puts the spotlight on countries it says are not meeting minimum anti-trafficking standards. You know,
who's saying this?
Trafficking. Well, the United States government. Trafficking standards. You know, they have tiers. They have tier one, tier two, tier three, and tier four. And they're imposing sanctions on countries in the bottom tier. I'm like, so there's a level of slavery that's cooler than the other level? I mean, because that's what human trafficking is. It's slavery. You know, I find it ironic the United States government and is tracking slavery, and they have tiers, levels of slavery that I guess are more acceptable than others.
Well, because we all know that the United States are the experts on slavery.
Yeah, well.
So who better to tell another country how to set up they what is it, the slave hierarchy? I mean, who better to tell somebody how to do it? That's why I said, who's saying it? Yeah, in the United States. Yeah.
Well, I mean, on that note, you know, the United States, they definitely didn't start it. I mean, we know it started way back in there. Slavery's been around forever in the day.
Forever.
I just don't see the tier part. That's where I'm like, okay, if we're watching this, fine. But then talking about sanctions, who has tiers? Who fell below this level? Who's above this level? I mean, for me, all that's irrelevant.
Why even talk about it? Why does it even exist to begin with?
Right. I mean, I look at it like you find the people who are indulging in trafficking, and to me, they are terrorists of the highest order. If you're selling and trading people, they should be taken out. They are public enemy number 1 through 10. On that note, I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Mr. Peter Moskos for being gracious enough to come on the show. I, of course, want to thank you, Miss 100%, for being my co-host, the great co-host that you are. And on that note, I'm Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the N-word, for the aforementioned Miss 100%, Smooth Drama. We are out. Peace.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth. Drama. Smooth.